Missed an episode of your favorite podcast? Choose from over a decade of content in our archives. Not just the latest episode. All free at GCNlive.com.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Chris is back from his hiatus on the Paracast this week. We've got a really fascinating show with lots and lots of questions from our listeners. It's going to be a really interesting piece of information. In any case, we haven't had a chance to talk to Chris very much about the International UFO Congress. I don't know, Chris, whether you saw the newspaper story in the Arizona Republic, which was picked up by USA Today, which made it seem like it was just a seminar and a bunch of healing sessions for people who were abducted by UFOs. What did they miss?
Well, obviously, that kind of coverage is to be expected by a newspaper in such a conservative place like Arizona. Unfortunately, we do have a lot of folks out there that still haven't gotten the message that this is a serious subject. It deserves serious attention. It deserves the powers of diagnostic hard science thrown at it. Instead, they just go for the convenient lady molding alien heads, or the guy with his implant finding device, or people that have had experiences that they can't explain and would like some sort of help with. I find it very disingenuous for reporters to go to an event like the UFO Congress and report a thin slice of information about the proceedings. I felt this year that Open Minds did an excellent job. It's taken them a little bit of time to zero in, I think, on a format in terms of the kinds of speakers that really deserve to be listened to. I did have some exceptions. James Gilliland, for instance, is not someone that I would give more than just a few seconds of my time. I joked with a few people that anytime you see someone playing a Native American flute who's not Native American at a UFO convention, run the other way. The only people I've ever seen do that are Stan Romanek and James Gilliland. So, other than that, though, I really think that the presenters were very well chosen. Being one of the presenters this year, I kind of feel strange saying that, but I really had a sense that they really are attempting. John Rayo and Angela and Maureen and Jason and Alejandro are really attempting to put together a well-rounded group of presenters that are above the giggle factor for the most part. They're trying to be all things for all people, so you got to have your occasional new age guru who heals people over the phone for $150 an hour. But I think by and large that the presentations were very good. I hit it off with and made some new friends. Mark Pilkington and I spent a lot of time together. Of course, Mark was the producer and one of the writers of the Mirage Men book and movie. He was probably the least popular speaker. I've never seen Stanton Friedman get up, line up at an audience mic to ask a presenter questions. And boy, he was raring to go. Of course, Mark was quite controversial with his comment that every single crop circle ever made was made by humans. A lot of people took exception to that. Even I did. I think all in all, it was a great, it was a really good Congress. I think they're improving every year. I really hope that they continue in this direction. One thing I'm going to suggest is trying to get younger people involved, maybe have a student rate for young people to come, to be able to afford to come, and also maybe do some streaming, stream the conference, maybe for a nominal fee. Go ahead, they have professional videographers videotaping the whole thing. All you need is a switcher and an internet connection, and you could be streaming the conference. So I think that would open it up for young people, which I think is important. All in all, I think it was really good.
Now, just to point out here in terms of location, this was held in the Fountain Hills area, but Arizona State University is about a 20-minute drive away. We're talking about tens of thousands of young people. And if there was a way to attract that audience, we would reach a new generation of people who are apt to be interested in what's going on. They're concerned about the environment. They're concerned about war. They're concerned about a lot of things, and certainly all these strange things that are happening They ought to be concerned about it, and I think they would if they were given the opportunity. Now, I was just thinking as you were talking about that reporter from the Arizona Republic. Now, let me have a few disclaimers here. I used to be a columnist for the Arizona Republic and for another newspaper in the Gannett chain, USA Today. My son was an intern and later actually received a paycheck for a couple of years writing for the Arizona Republic. So we have an affinity for that place. But what seems to have happened here is the reporter went to the concession stands, the vendors' booths, a separate room from the actual conference speakers, looked around, found the wackiest stuff, and decided to write a story. That's lazy reporting. That's going in there and sitting for an hour, grabbing a couple of quick interviews because Stanton Friedman was quoted because he was there in the vendor area for quite a while. And that's it. That's the story. It's not who spoke at the event. It's the photograph of alleged alien implants.
Again, I really do think it's it behooves a reporter to actually do his job and go in and do a well-grounded, well-rounded piece on an event such as this. It's just a never-ending source of irritation for me when I look at how mainstream media still is tending to cover these subjects. And as far as the actual conference itself, having people come from out of town, paying lots of money to stay in a hotel, pay money to, put a butt in a chair, so to speak. I don't think that this particular way of relaying information is going to be viable for much longer. The average age in that room, in that conference room, had to have been 60 or older. There's no way that kids are going to be attracted to this type of event. I think something online, something streaming, something more high-tech is going to be the best approach to try to get a younger audience and a younger crowd interested in these subjects. I think we're seeing this crossover time period where, the older generation from the 50s and 60s and 70s now are going to be passing the baton along, and we've got to figure out an efficacious way to do this and really keep this ball moving forward and keep the interest up and keep people motivated. And I think by utilizing mobile phone technology, internet streaming, these sorts of approaches, I think are going to go a long way to attract younger people to this subject.
Well, if they had a live stream, it might have helped. Remember, as far as young people are concerned, over at ASU, we're still in the middle of a semester over there. So they'd only get there on the weekends. Maybe they have to study. But if this thing was streamed online, they could watch at least the evening proceedings from their dorm rooms. And right. If it's done at a modest fee, enough to cover expenses, and we don't begrudge anybody earning a profit from what they do, but charge a fair price, it might have worked pretty well. In any case, we look forward to next year, but I have one more question to ask you before we go on to our guest this week. Bob Lazar, anything new there?
No. I just thought it was it was interesting. But we basically heard essentially the same story again, told with a little bit more humor at moments. And, I think he was there as more as a draw. I didn't really sit through his presentation. I pretty much was clued in exactly what was going to be happening. So it didn't really I think a lot of people walked away kind of scratching their heads, wondering why he was even there. Because I from what I understand, there was no new information imparted by Lazar. And, I think he's kind of a bit of a, water under the bridge at this point. I'd like to see somebody else from S4 or from Area 51 or somewhere out on the test range there come forward and become our new Bob Lazar and maybe spill some beans out there that we can sink our teeth into and learn something more.
In 20 seconds or less, tell us about our guest this week.
Well, David Childress is quite the amazing world traveler. He's written dozens of books. Many people question his suspension of disbelief and his contention that ancient aliens are responsible for megalithic sites found around the world that can't be explained by science. I don't care who you are. We can't even lift 1,000-ton blocks of stone, raise huge obelisks. David has been a champion of diffusionist archaeology for many years. He thinks that oceans were highways, not barriers. So it's going to be an interesting wild ride with David Hatcher Childress.
With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Talk to a sales rep at iWeb.com. Use the promo code TechNightOwl for a special discount.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Up the receiver. With your heart racing and sweat dripping from your forehead, you finally muster the courage to dial the number to call into your favorite talk radio show. It rings once, twice, and then...
Hello, it's GCN. What's your name and the state you're calling from?
Surprised you got through, you squeak out.
Jason from Minnesota.
Please hold.
As you patiently wait for your turn, you begin to daydream about being a famous talk radio host and what it would be like to have your own show.
Jason from Minnesota, you're up.
Millions of loyal listeners worldwide waiting to call and talk to you.
Caller, are you there?
Cheering crowds surround you, calling out your name.
Jason! Going once, twice. Okay, we gotta move on to the next caller.
You blew it.
Huh? Wait, no!
Interact with the host you're listening to right now online at GCNlive.com. Click on the community link. Engage with other listeners. Ask questions. Start debates. Don't agree with the host? Let them know. Be a part of the community at GCNlive.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here is what one doctor has to say about Extendovite.
I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your product just makes it so simple, right? To fool around with a lot of exotic things that don't work, we can just put them on your product and things start to work almost right away. I've had dozens and dozens of patients with heart problems who have corrected them, and what it's doing, there's so much garlic in there that has a yeast-killing effect. The yeast is a big problem in the gut, pushes the liver hard. It also has metal chelating effect, and most of the other herbs in there I find that strengthen the arteries. They help to neutralize free radicals. Close to what we do in our program as you can get as far as one supplement goes. It's working on the gut, it's working on the liver, it's working on the arteries. What more can you ask for?
To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
After about a four-year absence, we welcome back David Hatcher Childress. Of course, we know him from his publishing company, Adventures Unlimited Press, which has zillions of books. Did I say zillions? And of course, he's been very much involved in what he calls diffusionist archaeology, and I have no idea what that means, and he'll explain it to us. David, welcome back to the show, and I think for those who haven't heard your earlier appearances, maybe spend a few moments telling us about your background. What attracted you to any kind of archaeology, and how did you come to focus on such things as ancient astronauts?
Well, I've always been interested in travel and archaeology and history. My parents are Americans, but I was actually born in France in the late 50s. And so my parents liked to travel a lot. And so I was fortunate as a young kid to travel in Europe and Mexico and Pacific Islands. We went to Turkey and Greece and got to see things like Stonehenge when I was younger. And my father was also a real outdoorsy guy and loved to camp and hike. And I basically grew up in the mountains of Colorado as a mountain climber and backpacker and skier and stuff. But eventually, I think, you know, like so many people and many of your listeners, just grew up on a steady dose of Johnny Quest cartoons and Kung Fu episodes and Man from U.N.C.L.E. and the Time Tunnel and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm very interested always in ESP and Atlantis, Bigfoot, UFOs and whatnot. And people from my generation, too, as you'll remember, Gene, watching Neil Armstrong land on the moon and all that. It was all so exciting back then and just a kind of a normal upbringing in that way. But I was lucky. I got to travel when I was younger. I graduated from the University of Montana, and I just took to the road when I was still 18, 19, and went to the Far East, actually, as an English teacher, and lived in Taiwan, and ultimately in Hong Kong, and then later in Thailand, and traveled through India, and went to Nepal, went climbing in the Himalayas. I'd always been interested, of course, in yetis and also in mountain climbing and going to Tibet and Tibetan monasteries and things like that. And I was able to do all that. Later traveled across the Middle East and even through Afghanistan and Iran and Pakistan and Turkey and Syria to Jordan and then to Israel. Later to Greece again and Egypt, went to the Great Pyramid, wanted to see all the Egyptian stuff. And then I traveled for almost 3 years in Africa, and I worked with a catering company that was catering to Chevron Oil in Sudan at the time. And then suddenly I went from being just a $3 a day backpacker to actually having some money in the bank. And that allowed me to travel even more. And I returned across the Indian Ocean, went back to India and Nepal and Sri Lanka that time, and again back to China. And then I returned to the U.S. finally in the early 80s, and then I began traveling in South America and Central America and the Pacific Islands and places like that. And I've kept going all these years. I started writing books in the middle 80s, and my first book was a book called A Hitchhiker's Guide to Africa and Arabia. And then later I began writing my Lost Cities series, which are regional. There's one on China, Central Asia, and India, one on South America, one on North and Central America, one on Africa and Arabia, one on Europe and the Mediterranean and other areas too. So that got me going, and eventually once I started writing books, I was being published in Chicago, but my publisher one day kind of sat me down and told me not to quit my day job and told me it was actually publishers that, you know, make the money rather than authors. And at that point, I thought, well, hey, I'll be a publisher then. And so I started with Adventures Unlimited Press and ultimately a magazine called World Explorer Magazine. And that's what I do today. And I somehow make a living at all that, publishing books and magazines and writing books as well. And that's great. And now there's the Ancient Aliens TV show with Giorgio and Eric Van Doniken and all those guys, and I get to be on that, and it's a real pleasure and privilege, you know, to be part of all that. I enjoy it. So it's here I am today. I'm no looking back, I guess.
Okay, let's look back at something else here, ancient astronauts. Now, the concept of ancient astronauts is nothing new to people who follow UFOs and other literature. There were writings about it even in the early 50s, of course. If you remember the contactee George Adamski in his book, Flying Saucers Have Landed, the first part of the book written by Desmond Leslie, a British researcher, was about ancient astronauts. There was also a fellow named Jonah Fortner who had the concept of extraterrestrialism, which he referred to as the presence of advanced aliens in our past. And he wrote for Jim Moseley's Saucer News, a wild character. In fact, before we go on, did you ever meet Jonah at all?
No, I never did.
Oh, he's no longer with us, but he was a first-rate character. But okay, let's get to the main focus here of a lot of what you're doing. The possibility of the presence of advanced beings in our past. So, to be blunt about it, David Hatcher Childress, was God an E.T.?
Well, of course, that's a simple question, but I don't really have a simple answer for it. I'm not so sure that God's an E.T., but perhaps angels are E.T.s, and certainly God's helpers can be E.T.s, I think. And it's more of I would say that, I'm a spiritual person, so I believe in spirituality and higher beings, and I do believe in sort of helper beings who are here to assist us, even like the light beings that come during death experiences and stuff like that. But a lot of the stories in the Bible and other ancient texts do talk about Yahweh as a God and Yahweh, this vengeful God who, like with Moses in the Ark of the Covenant, he appears in a pillar of light in a cloud and he follows them. He actually incinerates people through the Ark of the Covenant. And in fact, my new book that I'm working on now is a book about the Ark of the Covenant and ancient powers like that. And I guess one of the things that happens in Exodus, where supposedly God tells Moses to build this Ark of the Covenant, which is basically a box of wood and metal, and then this special statue is to be built and placed on top of it, of these two cherubim, two angels who are facing each other, and they're holding like a bowl between them, and this light appears in the bowl, and that's God, that's Yahweh, supposedly. And Yahweh tells Moses all kinds of stuff, and even this Ark of the Covenant, according to the Bible, flies ahead of them. They have to carry it in certain ways. They cover it.
David Hatcher Childress, discussing ancient astronauts and more. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Free from the shackles of corporate America, we're the place for independent thinkers. GCN.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Fortean phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Attention listeners, SurvivalLife.com is giving away free EverStrike permanent matches for a limited time only. These matches are waterproof and will light in any weather condition, rain, snow, or sleet. It will still throw a spark. Its built-in ferro rod strikes at 3,000 degrees, and it is good for 15,000 strikes. Normally, $15. Today, it's free. Get yours at FreeSurvivalLighter.com. Again, that's FreeSurvivalLighter.com. Hurry, supplies are limited. Visit FreeSurvivalLighter.com today.
By now, you've heard about Bitcoins. But did you know that over 65,000 businesses accept Bitcoins? Listen, if you're already earning Bitcoins or trying to make money in the Bitcoin market, you've got to know BidBit.co. Because at BidBit.co, you can receive Bitcoin by selling your personal items or business products. You heard right. Whether personal or business, you can now buy, sell, and auction your products quickly, easily, and securely at BidBit.co. That's BidBit.co. BidBit.co.
What good is a Big Berkey water filter?
We get that question a lot here at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And in a word, the answer is protection. Protection from water main breaks, E. coli contamination, environmental chemical spills, pesticide runoff, chlorine taste and smell, and all forms of fluoride. Plus, Big Berkey water filters are the original gravity water filter system and most trusted on the market for a reason. Tested by multiple independent NSF EPA certified labs, they are the gold standard in water purification. At only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. That means big savings. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get a Big Berkey today at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit our website or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
Did you know that drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health? Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of only the most alkaline minerals. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins, and helps you regain health and energy. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen content, and raises the pH of your body to healthy levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's A-L-K-A-Vision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com today.
This is Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
David Hatcher Childress is with us, and he has written in a number of books, some of which focus on the possibility of ancient astronauts, that advanced aliens visited us a couple of thousand years ago and made a huge impact. Now, there's so many facets of this we can cover, so let's get to the nuts and bolts here, David. And that is, if you're talking to somebody who says, how do we know this happened? Are there a few pieces of smoking gun evidence that you can cite to say, this shows we've been visited by advanced beings 1,000 or 2,000 years or longer ago?
Well, for me, largely archaeological evidence, and I really work mainly as an archaeologist, so I'm constantly traveling all over the world and looking mainly at megalithic ruins and things that are especially well-made, large, mysterious in that sense of giant blocks that are quarried, and they're found all over the world. You put those in context with myths and legends, various stories, and I'm, you know, often very impressed by things that I see. Other places are rather disappointing in sometimes. But when you put those things in context, particularly very, very large megalithic ruins, things like Tiwanaku and in Bolivia and many other ruins that are typically ascribed to the Incas, which were very near to us, and you see how people who are supposedly primitive, and in the case of like the Incas, they allegedly didn't know about the wheel, or they didn't have iron tools, they didn't have writing either, and yet they supposedly built structures that we couldn't even really build today, and they're they're articulated and in many cases, such as a Tiwanaku or a Pumapunku or something, I mean, they're so well built and kind of, there's a lot of fancy articulation that's gone on there. Yet it's supposedly done by people who are bashing out ruins in, with rock hammers in their hands. And you look at a lot of that, those things, and particularly if you just look at them open-mindedly, they're not easily explained. And the idea that primitive, simple people are making this, and in many cases the archaeologists just have it wrong because they're actually ascribing the origin of these ruins to somebody who probably didn't even build them. So there you go with things that are quite tangible. And that's a good part about, I think the archaeology and the megalithic ruins is that they're there for people to see. In some cases, you have to actually go underwater to see some of them. The giant ruins at Nan Madol in the Pacific. I mean, that place is like the eighth wonder of the world. There's over 250 million tons of basalt are stacked up, not even on the island of Pompeii, which is in Micronesia, and it's relatively close to New Guinea, actually. But this 250 million tons of basalt, they're stacked up in walls and artificial islands and in the ocean. That giant city is not even built really on land. Yet most of it is above water because they've created artificial islands and things like that. But much of it's underwater. And the stones there weigh up to 80 tons is the largest ones. And once again, you have the people there are said to have not had any metal tools.
How did they think they got them out there from the quarry site? With outrigger canoes or something? I mean, what do conventional archaeologists? What's their explanation? I mean, how do they explain this?
Well, that is their explanation, that they brought them on outrigger canoes and things, and as far as that goes, they don't know where. Yeah, they don't know where the quarry site is. Entire mountains would be dismantled. It's prismatic basalt that's at Nan Madol, and so it's like the Giant's Causeway in Northern Ireland or other
hardest stones known to science.
Yeah, and there's certain formations of basalt that they crystallize in really kind of bluffs and cliffs, and the prismatic basalt is there to separate, if you can do that, in places. I mean there's a number of places where you can see prismatic basalt, but Nan Madol is one of the few places where prismatic basalt has it's in a huge amount. I mean it's 250 million tons of it. It's separated into these various sizes of they look like eight-sided Lincoln logs or something, only they're extremely heavy and hard. Basalt's magnetic, too. But they can't even, there's so much of the basalt there that entire mountains would have been disassembled in order to create the material, and they don't know where it came from. It baffles the archaeologists too. There's so much, but wherever it came from, it's thought that it was then put into outrigger canoes. A 20 ton, a 50 ton giant block of basalt, and then somehow floated around the island and dumped onto this coral reef, and in some cases piled up into 30, 40 foot high walls and things, and even why they would do it. The natives say there that the basalt was flown to the air, and magically flown to the air, and two brothers built the city. They had a flying dragon, supposedly. And when you go there, I mean, it's amazing. The islanders don't like even going to the city. They have a certain fear of it, and they believe that they'll die if they spend the night there. There's lights that move around the city at night, probably because of the magnetic presence of all the basalt, and it somehow creates some kind of mysterious sort of ballsing or something.
Piezoelectric discharges or something?
Yeah, something like that. And just certain atmospheric conditions make lights move around through the city. This is what people see at night who
This particular site kind of brings up what quite a number of people have asked on our forums at forum.theparacast.com, where our listeners get to ask our guests questions. And there's a number of questions that kind of are interested in finding out your thoughts about the possibility of some sort of ancient human civilization millions of years ago, possibly even, that may have existed that is not acknowledged by modern archaeology, that may somehow be responsible for some of these sites that were then inherited by the current or, you know, fairly recent residents of these areas. Do you think that there's a possibility that we may be seeing the vestiges of some prior civilization that's now gone?
I'll tell you what, Dave, let's hold that answer for a moment. I just want to remind our listeners that we have a place we'd like you to go. It's plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. And that's where you can learn about the Paracast Plus, where we offer a higher quality audio version of the show with 41 minutes of network ads removed. Also, the exclusive After the Paracast podcast. And you can get it for as low as $5 a month. And we have annual or five-year subscriptions. If you order a one-year or five-year subscription, our own Chris O'Brien has arranged to get you a copy of the ebook version of Stalking the Tricksters, plus.theparacast.com. And right now we're talking to David Hatcher Childress. He has a long question to answer about older advanced civilizations on Earth with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
A little right, a little left, but always independent-minded. The Genesis Communications Network, GCN.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
If the IRS has garnished your paycheck or seized money from your bank account, you need to get professional tax help now. Fast action is required to put a halt to these aggressive IRS collection tactics. You can count on the knowledgeable team of tax professionals at Wall & Associates. With over 30 years of experience, Wall & Associates has settled the tax problems of thousands of taxpayers for a small fraction of what they owed. For a free face-to-face consultation, call 1-800-425-4610 to put a wall between you and the IRS. 1-800-425-4610 or look for us on the web at wallandassociates.net. We solve tax problems. If you hire Wall & Associates today, you'll never have to talk to the IRS again. To stop the levies and seizures today, take action now. Call Wall & Associates at 1-800-425-4610. Wall & Associates. 1-800-425-4610.
Based on actual cases, results may vary, not a solicitation for legal services.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-905-MY-TV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. Say goodbye to the cable guy and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-905-MY-TV. Sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV. Say goodbye to the cable guy. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We have David Hatcher Childress, who, of course, has written many books, has Adventures Unlimited Press with Gene and Chris on the Paracast, and he was asked a long question based on several from our listeners about advanced civilizations on Earth. And maybe we're seeing the remnants of them in some of these artifacts. David?
Well, right, and I think that's a good point. With many of these cities, and ruins, whatever they are, Namadal, like Tiwanaku, a lot of what's in Peru, and ascribed to the Incas, places like Baalbek, even the Wailing Wall at Jerusalem. These ruins are, in some cases, they're so huge and so big, and it's essentially a base foundation, such as at Baalbek, where we have what are the largest known quarried blocks weighing up to 1,000 tons, and even more with some of the so-called unfinished blocks there. And so when you have ruins like this, and Namadal totally fits into this, you have giant blocks of stone. They're weighing 50, 100, 200, 1,000 tons. And they're stacked up and into walls. Sometimes they're very carefully cut and placed. With Namadal, they're actually, the basalt is rougher and it's more just, you know, giant blocks put up, and they're not carefully cut in place. But when you have something like that, it's going to last for a long time. I mean, it's virtually indestructible. And as long as it's above water, or in some place where people can actually live today, instead of on top of some remote mountain or something like that, then it's going to remain there. And a wandering tribe, thousands of years after this has been made, can come in and suddenly claim it for their own. In the case of the Andes, I mean, that's really what's happened with places like Machu Picchu and Cusco and Sacsayhuaman or Ollantaytambo. People are literally living in ancient buildings that were already there. And all they had to do was put a roof on many of these buildings and reoccupy them, because they're megalithic and they're virtually indestructible. The Spanish did try and rearrange some of the buildings. They would put in new windows or doors or something, and their construction was always of a more poor quality than the original. But so, because these buildings are essentially indestructible, they're occupied and reoccupied over generations, over literally hundreds and thousands of years. Jerusalem is a good example. What's at the base of the Wailing Wall and what was originally Solomon's Temple is also a Baalbek-type foundation of huge, what I call ashlars, giant stone foundation blocks that are the size of a railway car or something. And they're, like at Baalbek, they're weighing some astonishing amount of weight, something like 500 tons or something. And so if you're the roaming Israelites or the Incas or wherever you are, when you come along and you find what is essentially a giant wall that's already there, you can't even dismantle it yourself. Although in many cases that is what happens to ruins. They're dismantled and used for building blocks themselves. And the Spanish did that so much in Mexico and South America, where they would dismantle other pyramids and Mayan or Aztec things and then would build other churches and things. That's easier to do when you have smaller blocks and or bricks or something. And that's what happened to a lot of the ancient cities in India and Pakistan, though, in the valley cities, which are made out of fired bricks. And they're very well made, but yet, you know, they're not megalithic stones that are difficult to move. Even though these bricks were thousands of years old, and in fact, the Indus Valley civilization is known to go back to 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 BC, and yet in the 1940s and 50s, they were dismantling these cities to build railway buildings, and they were building the railway through Pakistan at that time, so they used those bricks as ballast. So we have this reuse of ancient materials. Sometimes, if it's possible, ancient city or structure is dismantled. But in other times, it's because it's megalithic, it can't be dismantled. And even modern archaeologists couldn't take these things apart. And now we want to preserve these things, fortunately. And so they become World Heritage Sites and things like that. But they're used and reused. And that causes a problem for archaeologists, too, because archaeologists make all kinds of kind of dumb and basic assumptions like, if we go into this giant wall, if we find a piece of wood to date, that will tell us when this wall was built. And then they go and they find somewhere in a little niche or cubbyhole in the wall, they find a bone or they find a piece of wood, and that's something that can be carbon dated. And then they'll carbon date it, and they'll say, oh, well, this piece of wood is 500 years old. And so archaeologists in their infinite wisdom will say, that's when this wall was built, 500 years ago, because that's the date of this piece of wood. But you know, that's just an assumption. That piece of wood could have been placed there 500 years ago by somebody who didn't build that wall, somebody who camped there for 20 years. And used to put all their bones and or even burials inside these walls. So the assumption that the person who put that piece of wood inside this wall is the builder is quite honestly probably completely wrong.
Okay, and so let me just ask you here so we kind of foreclose this. All right, so if taking the wood and carbon dating it is wrong, what should they be checking to check the age of the structure?
Well, right. It's not that easy to date the structure. If the structure itself has dates on it, then that would be fine. But you cannot date just a piece of a rock, even if it's been squared and quarried and placed there. We don't have any dating technique that at present that will tell us when that rock was quarried. It's interesting in that whole concept because Graham Hancock mentions in his book, just as a footnote, in Fingerprints of the Gods, how the University of Wales back in the late 1980s had tried to devise a technique, it was called chlorine 23, that would show when rock was quarried and cut from say a mountain quarry and removed, and they thought that they had this as a accurate dating technique, but they went then to Stonehenge to use this dating technique on Stonehenge, and the date that they came up with for the removal of the rock from the quarry was 20,000 years before present. And archaeologists wouldn't accept that. And so at that point, they said, well, this is just not accurate. This is a wrong dating technique because Stonehenge can't be that old.
Yeah, but in light of Göbekli Tepe and other sites, that's within the realm of reason.
Well, that's right. But that would have made Stonehenge still 10,000 years older than Göbekli Tepe. At a site like Göbekli Tepe, I've been there. Göbekli Tepe was a buried site. The builders of it, or somebody later, not necessarily the builders, decided to actually bury it, and they created this, what is a kind of artificial hill. It was already probably built up on top of a hill, and then they buried it. But as they uncovered it today, and it's German and Turkish archaeologists really doing it, because they unburied it, you know, they were able to come, again, they couldn't date the rock itself and that, but they did come up with datable objects. Pottery can also be tested with a different technique. But yeah, so they found those dates, and that was like carbon dating type stuff. And so there they came up with dates like 9,000 BC and stuff, and they had to accept those dates. Even though they don't interpret the site, you know, the way I would, they're saying there at Göbekli Tepe that this is the earliest site. They don't think there are earlier megalithic sites than that, although no doubt there are.
Let's go into more of this detail in our next segment with David Hatcher Childress and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Independently leading the way for the nation. Compelling talk for every political persuasion. We are GCN.
I'm really glad my buddy Mark turned me on to GunsAD.com. I got to tell you, I didn't want to buy any more firearms. I didn't want a paperwork trail headed back to Big Brother. I want 100% privacy. I want to be an invisible gun owner. Hello? So Mark says, hey, you know, GunsAD.com, Ghost AR-15. Ghost means invisible. Get it? Ghost AR-15. GunsAD.com. I got a couple, if you know what I mean. Go to GunsAD.com or call 844-2GUNS-80.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
By now you may have heard a bit about bitcoins, but did you know bitcoins are now over an $8.5 billion market? And did you know that over 65,000 businesses now accept bitcoins? Listen, if you're already earning bitcoins or trying to make money in the bitcoin market, you've got to know BidBit.co. Why? Because BidBit.co is where you can easily receive bitcoin by selling and auctioning off your own personal items or promote business products and services for bitcoins. You heard right. Whether personal or business, you can now buy, sell, and auction your product and services quickly, easily, and securely for Bitcoin at BidBit.co, the first and only marketplace website to offer BidBit escrow, a proprietary technology which gives buyers and sellers security and peace of mind because all transactions are protected. Start today. It's free to join, free to post, free to auction, and free to bid at BidBit.co. Buy, sell, bid, or auction everything Bitcoin. That's www.bidbit.co. BidBit.co.